RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with
Valentine's Day Val and
that's like the perfect. This is the perfect day for you.
I've been waiting for it.
Once a year, you get to Val yourself.
I guess so. Yes, but not on this show. Last year, what was it on a Thursday?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this won't happen. Well, next year, we got 3 more years.
I know.
So this is a very special day. Do you know today is the day that I got engaged?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, congratulations on an anniversary.
It is actually really crazy. One of my friends won a trip to Mexico on a radio station, but couldn't go. So she gifted me the trip and I took Will with me to Mexico. And when we got there, I had a little surprise on the beach. It was a proposal and it was ridiculously crazy and exciting.
Well, that's good. I'm sure he said, well, you know what? She's going to take me away on a trip. I better pay her back.
Yeah. He even asked my dad and everything. It was really cute.
I did that as well.
Yeah. He took him out. He had a drink with them, asked him.
First thing I did was, I first went to Lauren's mother and grandmother and then her father.
Wow.
Yeah. So wow.
That's beautiful. And so, yes, today is my anniversary of my proposal, my engagement. Was very good. So it's a good day. It's a fun day today.
Yeah.
We never celebrate Valentine's Day and we don't ever celebrate the proposal, but it's still a good day.
Well, hey, it's been a good week too. Big time week.
Yeah. You have been a nonstop stream of questions, my friend.
Yeah. Well, because I have to put all this stuff together again. Like last night I did a big background on, first of all, you know, what happened to Roger Stone? Why did he get arrested and charged with in the first place? What is the background there? And to recreate all that, going back to, well, I guess the big day, the arrest in January of last year, to lay that foundation down, to go and then understand what was going on in D.C. at the at the DOJ, the attorney's office out there, and his trial, and the judge, and these resigning prosecutors, and this forewoman, this head juror that has been protected in for some weird way, everything that's going on, and what this unfolding drama really means for the next coming months and years. So it was a lot of backtracking for me.
Yeah, it's a big story. It's complicated to understand. Yeah. That's for sure. A lot came out of that whole thing, right? So we talked about it briefly on Wednesday, but they gave these attorneys, these U.S. attorneys who this it really appears this was a complete setup.
Yeah.
To be honest. But these attorneys gave a sentencing recommendation to the Department of Justice that they said, OK, and then submitted something else to the court. And then Barr told them this is just ridiculous. There's no way we're going forward with this. And then Trump tweeted about it. And then they submitted the new sentencing guidelines. And then the attorney stepped down. So
yeah, the committing to lesser sentences was apparently behind closed doors. And then the public play was 7 to 9 years, knowing it would cause some kind of a public disturbance between the attorney general that can then be spun by the media as another interference by the Trump administration, some kind of political debauchery and all that stuff. That's what it's looking like to me. And then, of course, the resignations they look like really canned protest movements.
Yeah. Yeah. And technically, we're going to play a bunch of clips about this today because it's one of the most, more pressing things that's come out in the news the past couple of days. But, you know, apparently this is also, as per Matt Whitaker, a fireable offense, what they did. You can't do that. Like, and all these people that are acting as though the Attorney General of the United States of America doesn't have the purview to go in and handle this. What do they think, that the U.S. attorneys are rogue institution, like people that run the Justice Department? Here's some clips from Barr from his interview he did yesterday, the interview that everybody's taking a different tack on, where he says, you know, Trump's tweeting is making it impossible for me to do my job. Did you see that?
Yeah. And I was asked a lot about that last night, saying, what do you think about this? Is he backstabbing Trump? I said, if this is all he said, I don't think so.
First of all, I agree with him. If he's serious, okay? So there's a couple different ways we can approach this. Number one, he's frustrated because giving the perception that, you know, any action that Barr takes is in lockstep with President Trump because President Trump is right. Do you understand what I'm saying? So in other words, President Trump denounces this stuff and yells about it and says how it's unfair. And then in tandem and in parallel with that, not connected in any way, shape or form to the president, AG Barr is following law and order and people start getting, you know, in trouble and questioned and whatever else goes on and sentencing recommendations are changed. It gives the appearance of political interference by the president of the United States.
Well, yeah, because the story up until this point is that this is a lawless president and people believe this is a lawless, corrupt president. So if he's actually in reality standing by and wanting to make sure that all of the statutes and laws we have on the books are enforced, then it doesn't matter what he does. Everybody thinks that even enforcing the law is lawless. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it becomes the ankle weight for Attorney General Barr, who is, you know, not necessarily an independent body. A president brings in his attorney general.
His wingman, right, Frank?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. The wingman, as we've heard before. But, you know, that's just what it is. They created that's part of the whole need to slander and skew the way that we look at the president and what he's doing in a legal fashion, because it becomes an ankle weight for everybody around him. And then you get calls for people like attorney generals to resign or accuse themselves so that they don't actually follow the law.
Exactly.
So that business as usual can keep going on, which is in fact lawless.
Yeah, I know. So, you know, the one angle of it is that he's right. Just, you know what? Tone it down a little bit. Let me do what I got to do. And time's going to come for you to be able to say whatever you want, because we'll have indictments. We'll finish the case. We'll do what we got to do. Hold on one second. Sorry, I had a cough. Then there's the angle that there's no way that that AG Barr would have gone on television and said this if it hadn't already been talked about with the president. Like, he wouldn't just do this interview and say that stuff without President Trump knowing that he was going to do it. So is this a ploy to place some distance between he and the president, give them the story? You know, things are on the rocks. Barr doesn't seem to be, to me, the type of guy to play games per se. But you never know. All I have to say to everyone is calm the F down. Just everybody calm down. Okay. I understand if Barr was being genuine with what he said. I understand why. And that doesn't mean that I don't want President Trump to tweet about the lawlessness we've experienced for the past 6, 7, 10, 20, 30, 60 years. But it does mean that he has to not shoot himself in the foot before we get to the finish line. If he's right there and he's leading by a nose, just take a little bit more of a careful approach. Now, in comes the hate mail, right? I mean, you know, people, like, all of a sudden yesterday, I saw a bunch of people like, I hate Barr. I can't believe. I'm like, whoa, people, calm it down, for goodness sakes.
Well, it's actually exactly what I said last night when I was looking at it. I said, well, he has a point. I understand. And I know a lot of everybody understands that the president needs his Twitter account to circumvent the media, all media, even media that some people would consider in a traditional sense should be friendly to him. So I understand that. But 15 to 20% of the stuff that he tweets, he could just as easily
not
chill.
Yeah.
Chill. I mean, he uses it very effectively and he has done so much with it. And but 15 to 20% of the tweets he could just as easily do without. And it would actually be beneficial.
Yeah. Maybe there's a reason. Maybe there's a method behind the madness. Who knows? Who knows?
Oh, I'm sure there is. But he's also an impulsive man.
Yeah.
Come on. He's not a perfect man.
No.
We all knew this. So he's impulsive. And I just think like it's like overwatering a potted plant sometimes.
This isn't new coming from you. You've said this for a long time.
Yes.
Just
yes.
To make it clear.
But then on the other hand. On the other hand, whereas I have said that before with the tweets, like for example, when he's going battling back and forth with Stormy Daniels, yeah, of course this is a big farce, and there's so many ways that you can expose it, and of course all you need to really do is give it time, because here it is at the end of everything, she owed him $300,000, and then after that we realized that Michael Avenatti was stealing from her, so of course these people were going to be blown up in the public eye, but you know, to go out of your way to call her a horse face something like, okay,
well, I mean, she kind of
I understand but it's just like little things like that. But, okay. But as far as the, as far as him giving distance, I don't know if he's an actor or not. But what I do know is that, like we started off this conversation, all people have been characterizing him as is a water carrier for the president. So if he is on the brink of doing some very significant things and making some very significant moves within the Department of Justice, then this is really a very low risk, high reward way of maybe making a play to the public that, look, I am a man of my own convictions, and I'm not afraid to push back on the president if I feel like I'm maybe getting bullied by him.
Perfect segue. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
To have public statements and tweets made about the department, about our people in the department, our men and women here, about cases pending in the department, and about judges before whom we have cases, make it impossible for me to do my job and to assure the courts and the prosecutors in the department that we're doing our work with integrity.
Mr. Barr, the president does not like to be told what to do. He may not like what you're saying. Are you prepared for those ramifications?
Of course. As I said during my confirmation, I came in to serve as attorney general. I am responsible for everything that happens in the department, but the thing I have most responsibility for are the issues that are brought to me for decision. And I will make those decisions based on what I think is the right thing to do, and I'm not going to be bullied or influenced by anybody. And I said at the time, whether it's Congress, newspaper, editorial boards, or the president, I'm going to do what I think is right. And, I cannot do my job here at the department with a constant background commentary that undercuts me.
Yeah, this is even less of a story than I thought it was to begin with. Even less.
I mean, it's pretty clear. I don't understand. Like, why is everyone flipping the F out?
Yeah, I mean, even when you listen to it in the form of the context of the conversation, he's just hearkening back to his original arguments that he told a very skeptical Senate that wanted to stop his nomination. That, hey, you know, what have we heard from every conversation that they had with Neil Gorsuch, with Brett Kavanaugh, with anybody that they brought forward?
Can you separate yourself from this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or how would you rule? Well, they say, listen, I would rule according to the law. I am not coming in to carry water for somebody. Mm-hmm. I'm coming in to enforce what is on the books. He just restated that. So, of course, if you're reading the headlines on ABC News, which is what I read last night, and you see Bill Barr blasts the president. That's not a blasting.
No, it's not. But I mean, I do think that what he's saying has merit.
Of course he does. And you know what? He should say something like that in that situation, because it is actually the least inflammatory thing he can say to cause a problem with the I don't know how the president reacts, but
well, the president says he's fine with it. I mean, you know,
it's the least inflammatory thing he can actually say while also standing firm on his independence as a lawman. I don't understand.
I don't understand either. Here.
About your decision. Did you talk to the president at all about your decision regarding the recommendations?
Never.
Anybody from the White House call you to try to influence?
No. Nope. So I have not discussed the Roger Stone case at the White House.
And?
Simple in this particular case. And once the tweet occurred, the question is, well, now what do I do? And do you go forward with what you think is the right decision, or do you pull back because of the tweet? And that just sort of illustrates how disruptive these tweets can be.
So you're saying you have a problem with the tweets?
Yes. Well, I have a problem with some of the tweets. To have public statements and tweets made about the department, about our people in the department.
Oh, that's the same. Men and women. That's here. The part of the same thing from before. But he's basically saying, I had already decided to do this, and then I get this tweet, and I'm like, do I stop doing this now so it doesn't look like I had made it a political decision? Like, does everybody out there logically understand what this man is saying? Like, if I still go forward with what's right here in the Roger Stone case, it's going to appear to the world now that I'm doing it because the president tweeted, when in actuality, that's not the case.
Precisely.
And now here I am sitting in this interview I don't want to be doing, explaining that to the world so that we don't have to deal with these ridiculous calls from, you know what I'm saying? Like, President yep. Trump, respectfully, please just think a little bit harder before you push those buttons and hit send. I have written hundreds of tweets that I have stopped and deleted. Hundreds.
Yeah, no, I mean, most of, actually, I tweet very little. I do a lot of retweeting, and I just try to keep whatever. I try to keep all thoughts to myself and in my notes for the nightly show so I can make sure that I have time to articulate, and that you can hear my voice, you can read my facial expressions, you can understand what's going on there. The Twitter is, I mean, we've been talking about it. The new generation of drama that has popped up in all of our lives since our forms of communication have gone digital, since we started texting with each other, since we started emailing. I mean, I'm sure that you can get. I'm sure that there was plenty of drama that was starting. What the hell does this line in this letter mean? Everybody's writing each other letters, typewriting each other letters, mailing. So, I mean, whenever you take somebody outside of a conversational environment, then there's always just going to be so many ways for weasels in the media, especially, that have a need to mold what is going on in the world to their view of the world. It's just going to give them so much more fodder. So now that I listen to this whole thing in context, I'm wondering to myself, is this just William Barr doing damage control in another stupid interview? Or is this a little showing of Kabuki theater? I don't know. But it's definitely nothing that I would be worried about at all.
No. There's a couple clips I have here of Matt Whitaker and Kevin McCarthy talking about all this. And like, obviously, look. You're talking about a man here in the presidency who has been there's been not another person on this earth, I think, that has been more persecuted in terms of criminal accusations, lies, smears than President Trump. They literally tried to stop him from being elected and then are in the midst of still trying to execute a coup on this man. He's angry like any of us would be. He's not saying anything that any of us wouldn't say or would say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's not saying anything
or want to say.
Or right. And so he speaks for us, and that's actually another good segue. There was a piece my mom sent me by Dr. Carolyn Borisenko, and she sent it to me in DM, and it only had a few tweets. It didn't have very many tweets at the time, but it was titled In the beginning, it was titled, you know, I forget the name. She changed the title of it, but it's really, really good. You just sent me something?
Yeah.
It's really good.
That's for later.
Okay. So it's really a great article. She basically is a Democrat. She was a Democrat anyway. She was a Democrat. And she moved. She went to all the stuff in New Hampshire. She talks about, do you remember we had a show about the knitting fiasco that had gone on in the knitting community?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we got a very angry letter from somebody who was very upset with us about the things we said about knitting.
Yeah.
And I internalized them, right? Because it was somebody who was upset. And then she's a knitter as well. And she brought up the knitting community in this article. And since I had the background, I really understood it. She said that's kind of just shocked her. Like she couldn't believe the vitriol coming from knitting. And so she decided that she was going to start opening her eyes. It's a walk away story, basically. But it's really, really very objective and well done. She writes for Forbes. She's a writer. She's a professional. And she ended up at a Trump rally over the New Hampshire primary. And she said that the reason why this is not a cult, she said the reason why everybody is so exhilarated and happy and excited at Trump rallies and for this president is because they feel and believe and know that he speaks for them. Not that he's a cult of personality, but he represents them. And he does. He does. There is no denying it. So she left the Democrat Party. Now she's an independent. She says that she's, you know, she's pretty sure she's not sure she's going to vote for President Trump yet or not. But it's a very middle of the road, very objective column. And so when she had first posted it, I obviously sent it to Brandon immediately. And I said, hey, you know, good for you on this article, because we don't need, Frank, everybody to run over and vote for President Trump. We need to change the discourse in this country to be at least somewhat normal again. And when people like this open their eyes, now she's obvious. This went viral. This article went viral. She got retweeted by Glenn Beck. She got retweeted by Brandon, obviously. She got retweeted by Don Trump Jr. She's not a Trump voter. She's just a normal, objectively thinking human being who is now experiencing firsthand what happens when you're an objectively thinking human being, because she's being accused of being a Russian asset. She's being tarred and feathered. She had years ago come out and said that she was raped by a coworker and her bosses ignored it. And she's being told she was a liar now by the left. The left is telling her she was lying about her rape story. Isn't that a freaking amazing? Like, she just wrote an article before this Trump article came out, before this Trump rally article came out. She wrote an article about being falsely accused in the era of Me Too.
Yeah.
So she's not a partisan ideologue. We'll put it that way. Yeah. Does she lean left on some social stuff that we probably wouldn't agree with? Yeah. But she's also starting to see what the hell is going on. So I, you know, struck up a DM conversation with her the other day, and there's a chance, I don't know yet, but she might be writing for Uncover DC, because she's brilliant. She's brilliant. And I think it's a perspective that we need to pay more attention to. So there's that.
You know, that is always the perspective I grew up with. I really didn't have family that was staunchly one party or another. And to be honest, I mean, obviously that's just because it's my family. That's just anecdotal. I mean, people have all types of traditions and stuff, but I just remember there never used to be that much of a big deal about
right.
Yeah, it was almost like, you know, no matter where you were, what school you were in, no matter what small little shop you were in around here, a small little dinette you want to go get some lunch or whatever, there was always a picture of the president on the wall and a picture of the Pope on the wall, no matter who they were,
yeah,
what party, you know. And it's just it's not like that anymore, because from it's so when I think of independent people who declare their independence again, not necessarily I belong to the independent party, because of course the independent party is the home of Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. Well, so, she's just saying I'm done being programmed.
Right. That's just the way I used to remember it in what little rudimentary way I remember those things as an oblivious kid. And there was never anybody walking around, you know, flashing gang signs of their of you know, this one and that one, or waiting to pounce on anybody that says something a little bit, you know, I don't know, that they perceive as derogatory towards some kind of worldview that has become their sole reason for living. You know, this religiousness for everything, it's a modern phenomenon.
Yeah. It's something to behold, Frank, what they're doing to this woman who is handling it. Just, I mean, she's handling it beautifully, you know, but it just to see the hatred. Now, you would like some of us, she voted for Buttigieg in the New Hampshire primary. That's what she did, right? And I'm like, and one person was like, oh yeah, but there she goes and she votes for, I'm like, what, do you wake up one morning and know everything? Are you serious right now? Like, will you just relax? You're part of the problem, this person who commented. And so are the people on the left who are just hate-filled lunatics. Like, you don't see the large majority of, quote, Trump supporters are not attacking this woman for voting for Buttigieg. They're saying, good for you, lady. You'll come around eventually if it's meant to be. But thank you for taking a step away to see what we've been dealing with here for years.
Yeah, and what does coming around mean? It doesn't mean finally you're coming around to Donald Trump and now we'll be here forever.
Right.
Donald Trump, even if he wins in November, is gone in 5 years. And I think that many of us out there have plans, hopes, and dreams of living longer than 5 years. It's a part of the reason why I don't care about voicing my displeasure with anything that Donald Trump does. I'm going to support him until he's out of office because I want him to be successful. It doesn't mean that we should rationalize everything he does
exactly.
That does not pass the sniff test.
Thank you.
So.
No, you're right. He's going to make mistakes and we're allowed to disagree with some things he does. For goodness sake.
And if you can't, then we've just become the polar extreme.
Exactly.
If you can't.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. If you can't disagree, like if I come out and say, I really disagree with what the president, it happened to me on the vaping thing. Holy crap. You would think that I just like decided I was going to vote for Nancy Pelosi or something, the way people were treating me. That bothers me. I'm sorry. It does. It bothers me. You guys need to think for yourselves. We can't be some zombie freaking. Otherwise, what's the point? What's the point? So in other news, Frank, I'm going to read something really funny. And it's 100% true story. Some people have been questioning this. So last night I had a very busy night. I had a lot of things to do. And I got home and settled in time to tuck my kids in. Nightly regimen that we do, nightly routine. I go in their rooms. I sit with them for 5, 10, 15 minutes before they go to sleep, play with their hair, you know, talk, whatever. So I get into my daughter's room last night. She goes, oh, Mom, I forgot. I have to tell you something. And I'm like, what? And she goes, Mrs. So-and-so, won't say the name, you know, there was an incident at her school the other day that somebody did something horrible. And now they're all getting metal detected when they go in and they're pissed off about it. They're complaining. They're angry, whatever. And one of the kids in the class goes, you know what? Stop complaining about this. There's nothing we're going to do to change it. Right. And the teacher goes, bravo. Good for you. That's a great way to think. Come up here and get some candy. Their little treat. Right. So what does Viviana do? She says, well, you complain about Donald Trump being your president, but there's nothing that you're going to do about that.
Oh, good. Good.
I said, Viv.
Good. Great.
I said, oh my gosh. I'm like, I don't know what I should do with you right now.
I'm so proud of you, honey.
I said, that was good.
See, this is the thing I talk about with Lauren all the time. It's like, you know, we have children. I don't know. I'm going to have to more than anything else, I just have to concentrate on me around the kids.
Oh, gosh. Let alone,
you know, not so much try to concentrate on what the children are. I would like to actually be a little bit more liberal with things. I mean, obviously, as far as I want to watch myself. Because I can't even imagine what I would be sending into a school. What kind of a wrecking ball I would be sending into a kindergarten? what I would get back in the progress reports? I gotta watch out.
Look, we are my husband and I are just completely ourselves around our kids, and that's not always the greatest thing, because we talk and we say what's on our minds and we don't kind of filter ourselves a lot of the time. And, you know, maybe that's not the best way to do it. I don't know. All I know is it takes something for a 14-year-old to come up with that line on a whim, because she's done with it. She's done taking, like, she's finished with it. She's just so fed up with being like bombarded with all this negative when she knows the truth.
What'd the teacher say?
She almost gave her detention. It was a pretty, yeah. And you know, I said, Viv, that was really fresh. Like, you have to be careful. You have to learn to be not such a smartass. And, you know, I said, but, like, my tweet said, I had to tweet it because it was too good not to tweet. So I said, I don't know whether to give her a high five and take her shopping or to ground her for talking like that to a teacher.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, shoving, shoving, shoving. And then, of course, I showed her the tweet and she's like, Mom, she's like, I feel a new pair of shoes in my foot.
Let's go shopping. And then let's go to Pinkberry.
What's that?
Oh, you're from the South. I forgot. You probably don't have a Pinkberry down there, even though I haven't even been there in years. It's frozen yogurt from up here.
It's Froyo.
Yeah, but I don't have I'm more of a Haagen-Dazs guy, but they took away the last of the Haagen-Dazs stores around here.
Haagen-Dazs was good.
You ever been to a Haagen-Dazs actual shop?
No. Have you ever been to a Cold Stone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have them a lot. We used to have a lot over here. It seems like they're dying out.
We have a Sweet Frog. Sweet Frog. I can't eat that stuff anymore anyway, so. Oh, but that is what it is. Okay. Froyo. Moving on. Oh, my phone locked up, Frank. It completely locked up here.
What are you looking for?
I'm looking for my next note of what's next to talk about in the show today. Here we are. Oh, I wanted to play this. Okay. I don't know. I happen to know Scott Pressler personally. Like, as a, you know, we talk or whatever, because he's at a lot of things I'm at and we just get to know each other. And we did an event here in South Carolina together, which was incredible. Anyway, I mean, there's nobody better than this guy. And what you see is what you get. He's just amazing. He's just full of energy. The most amazing thing. Nothing he does is for any other reason than he wants to be effective and he cares. You know how some people do shit just for the publicity?
Yep.
It's not Scott Pressler. Not Scott Pressler. So here is something he recorded when he was being confronted in. So let's just tell the story real quick. So San Francisco, Brandon went to San Francisco, did an event there, which got shut down. Long story. But long story short, he helped out. He met the walkaway team, met up with Scott Pressler and brought volunteers, and they all cleaned up San Francisco together. And Antifa was protesting them cleaning up San Francisco, saying that it was not tolerant of the homeless. It was basically an assault on the homeless community. Because I guess cleaning up garbage is saying that homeless people are dirty. I have no idea what the logic was, but This is
there's a lot of that going on in San Francisco and a couple of other California cities there too, where city council members were actually speaking out against the creation, because you know that they had to create maybe San Francisco was one of the cities. They had to create a special group of people, of public employees within the Department of Public Works. They were six-figure jobs too.
Oh, to
of hazmat.
Oh, gosh.
No, they are hazardous material teams. They went around in hazmat suits and they had to power wash the human shit off of the sidewalks. And of course, while some people are saying, well, listen, if the city is going to completely waste away into this kind of degradation, we got to be able to keep up with the cleanup. Other people are actually saying, making those same horrible arguments that we're getting to, is that the cleanup process itself is racist. Insulting. It's racist. It's insulting and it's classist.
Get out of there. Get out of there. While you still can. Woo.
Get out of there, but don't take your thoughts and your voting practices with you.
No, abandon those, please. Would you please abandon those? But anyway, what I wanted to put, I mean, seriously, this is the stupidity. Like, I just floated by on my timeline this morning a clip of a man, obviously high out of his mind on something, sitting in a chair in the middle of San Francisco, touching himself. In broad daylight.
Know, listen, can you really fault the guy? Life's hard.
Poor choice of words, Frank.
Life's hard.
It's a family show, Frank.
California dreaming.
Yeah, I'd say. All right, so here's Scott. He made this tweet. It got almost 40,000 retweets already. In a day, I was cleaning up the streets of San Francisco and this young woman became very aggressive. I don't know what came over me, but I proclaimed my support for Donald Trump on the dirty streets of San Francisco and people listened. I hope this goes viral. Listen to what he says.
Why are illegal immigrants more important than Americans? I'd like to hear an answer.
Why are people illegal?
Why are illegal immigrants more important than homeless people sleeping on the streets? Why do we in one of the biggest economies here in California take care of illegal immigrants, but our people are sleeping on the streets? I'd like to hear an answer to that. Why? Nobody can ever answer
It'll
that
be on
question.
YouTube.
Why don't people put American citizens first, but illegal immigrants get everything? And I hope you post this. I want this to go viral because I give a damn and I care about my community. My dad is a retired Navy captain. He served our country honorably. My grandfather is a retired Navy captain, and I'm doing my part to help our country because I give a damn and I'm going to fight for it. And I am 100% voting for Donald Trump on Tuesday, November 3rd, 2020. The Democrat Party does not put our people first. They put sanctuary cities first. They put illegal aliens first. They tax us. They tax our water. You can't even do laundry and shower on the same day while Nancy Pelosi is getting hundreds of thousands of dollars, robbing our pockets, not doing anything for our people, not passing legislation, passing out pens like they're candy. Meanwhile, President Trump is signing United States Mexico Canada agreement, and he's signing trade deals, and he's cutting our taxes, and he's securing the border, and he's putting our veterans first. I am proud of President Trump, and I am voting for him because he's putting the American people first. Period.
Well,
he's a genuine guy. He is.
You can hear it in his voice. Like, you don't even need to see him.
Yep.
That wasn't a speech full of platitude. He was basically he was emotional. His voice was shaking. Because that's the way I feel too. I'm so like, thank God for people like Scott Pressler.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I hope, I wanted to get him on the show. He's a very hard guy to get in touch with. But if he ever comes to New York, love to get him in studio.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah.
You know, I was that thing that I had sent you in message. That was clip.
Yeah.
It was a clip of. We may be too far off the topic now, but it was a little bit more about Roger Stone and the DOJ and Chuck Schumer talking about how what we're seeing, right? This was in particularly mind blowing because he's talking about, of course, we have a rogue DOJ now, and he outlines the exact game plan, the exact sequence of events that was used to start the entire Russia investigation.
Let me play this.
I mean, it's so amazing.
Let me play it.
The president is claiming that rigging the rules is perfectly legitimate. He claims an absolute right to order the Justice Department to do anything he wants. And the president has, as his attorney general, an enabler, and that's a kind word, who actually supports this view. Does anyone think it's out of the question that President Trump might order the FBI to investigate Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, or anyone else without any evidence to support such an arbitrary violation of individual rights?
Wait.
Oh, I know, some far-right conspiratorial writer who has no credibility and who just makes things up, writes it, Fox News puts it on, Sean Hannity or someone talks about it, and then the president says, investigate.
Wait.
Oh.
That is third world behavior.
What?
Not American behavior.
That kind of behavior.
Hold on, let me stop it.
Now, see, this is, and he goes on that thing. He just goes on with how bad it, how third world and banana republic it is. But let me just say, number one, that is why I say Bill Barr's comments weren't even really that bad. And what he did say, at least, is some kind of a rebuttal to this craziness that's being said. The other thing there, too, is that this is exactly, as you know, and many of the people who are listening know, this is exactly how the Russia fairy tale got started. The inspector general just confirmed it with his last report. Fabricated information from Chuck Schumer's party's candidate in 2016 was legitimized by the media and investigated by the DOJ. And because it was predicated on no real intelligence, it died this very slow, painful public death with nothing to show for it but these unrelated process crimes like Roger Stone. Unrelated crimes that Chuck Schumer is still using right now as a crutch in this very address.
Crazy. It's crazy.
It is so depraved and maniacal as far as the level of evil goes. It's unbelievable.
They're evil people. I've been saying this. So is everybody else. They're evil. There is no other. There is like, oh, goodness. The things that...
Yeah, Chuck Schumer is an empty husk of a person.
Getting angry about this doesn't even matter because it. Who is it? What? We're so far apart. Like it's not even. There's no bridging that gap.
No.
These people are psychopaths. You know.
And ultimately, this is why, you know, Tracy. Last night, I read half of the message that you and I were sent by our mutual friend. With the DOJ and intelligence connections.
Yep.
I read the second half that was talking about what the game plan was, how much stuff was incriminating stuff was found in the process of investigating. And then, of course, that the conflict of conscience. What do we do if we're trying to save the republic? But if we really clean things up and we really expose everything, we might destroy the republic. This is why I say to myself, I'm always a pull the pin kind of a guy, because as you just said, there is no bridging. There's no bridging the gap anymore. No, if the anvil drops on all of these people's heads before November or after November, it is not going to appease anyone. They're not going to think that this is a legitimate seeking of justice, whether it is after the election and they can't claim election interference anymore or not. It doesn't matter. That's why I just say pull the pin. We got to watch.
We got to do it. We got to do it. We got to burn it down now before there's no way we can't keep going this way. We just can't. There's no rule of law anymore. There's no rule of law in this country anymore. Like I would then say, you know, obviously facetiously right now, but stop paying your taxes. Just stop.
Well, you know, I also said something last night there too. And I understand that there's a lot of people inside of the DOJ and stuff that are doing these counter operations pretty much. and trying to figure out what things are going on. And I have to imagine it's very disconcerting to see, oh man, I love my job just as much as people like Lisa Page say they love their job. She gets very sanctimonious about it, you know, our beloved department.
Yeah, she's she's the worst thing to happen to Twitter.
I can't stand when people start getting so lovey and romantic with their favorite government agencies. It's gross to me.
She doesn't even mean it.
No, I know. It's all just a show because, you know, it just like that the forewoman from the jury. She even came out and said something. You see that?
Yes. Well, yeah. And Cernovich found her.
Yeah, the forewoman from the jury on Roger Stone's trial that everybody, she was protected by Jesse Liu and the prosecutors and this runt of a judge. It was almost exactly like Lisa Page's tweet, and for the same reasons, because Lisa Page should be in a lot of trouble, and this Tamika, whatever her name is, she should be in a lot of trouble too. She lied on an official court document, so
shouldn't she go to jail like Roger Stone?
For much longer than Roger Stone would be in a sane world. I mean, he did commit a crime. He committed a crime because, of course, he was the target of a very pointed and driven investigation. They knew what they needed to collect scalps because, as Devin Nunes has said, there was no electronic communications from Five Eyes. There was no real reason. We don't know the true origin of the Russia investigation. When you asked Robert Mueller that in that hearing over the summer, what did he say? It was not within my purview.
It's not in my
the beginning, the origins of the investigation, an investigation for which it seemed at times he had unlimited purview.
Mr. Mueller, did you investigate Fusion GPS?
Who?
If that was not, if the beginnings of the Russia investigation wasn't within Robert Mueller's purview, then why the hell were people like Paul Manafort? Why are they in solitary confinement?
Hey, Mr. Manafort, did you investigate the Steele dossier?
Not in my purview.
The Steele dossier started the crossfire. Not in my purview. Why when we were talking the other day, I said, does this mean now, once we get to the bottom of this now, that everybody who's been convicted has to have, you know, all that rolled back because it was on an unfair predicate? You got to imagine, you never should have been looking here to begin with to see this anyway.
Well, how many people have been let out of? I've read stories my entire life of people let out of prison, life sentences, sometimes death row, because there was ill-gotten evidence. And new things emerge that show that, one thing led to another, and it was not on the up and up, and things just get thrown out. I mean, it's the same thing. If 9 out of 10 of the people that are listening to this show right now, if they had the FBI focus in on them with the intention of getting them for something, then they would be gotten in the same way that Roger Stone would. Because this entire thing, and like I said before, Nunes brought this up, this entire thing was a perjury trap, obstruction trap. That's all it was, because they knew very, very shortly on in the process, there was no predicate and there was no link between Russia and Donald Trump. There was nothing there. So you need to collect scalps, because you have to legitimize the reason why you are going for so long. And number two, people are going to start asking, not only why is this taking so long and you're not coming up with anything? But I mean, you know, I guess that's 2 points in one, actually. Why is this taking so long and you're not coming up with anything? Because it was nothing there. So they had to collect scalps. Roger Stone's one of them.
Frank, this is a big surprise for you. You ready?
Yeah.
Breaking. Numerous House Democrats are privately pushing to hear testimony from the prosecutors who quit Roger Stone's case in protest again.
No, no, you get out of here.
Did you know this is an impeachable offense, President Trump?
Yeah, no. It's amazing. I heard Swalwell say yep. the other day or yesterday, we're not ruling out impeaching the president again. You know what? I know that they know that it would be the worst move, and really just. But I don't see. I've been wondering what the next thing was going to be. And I guess if they have nothing else, it's not like I said before, it's not like they can just be sitting there twiddling their thumbs. They have to do something. So I guess if they have nothing else, they can do it again. They're going to have a House majority until January.
I have two things we'll do right before the end. One of them is okay. So. In like, I'm thinking of so many witty responses to what you're saying about what they're going to do. And I'm not going to say any of them because they're all bad.
It's all right.
Like, really, like, you're so, it's true. What legislation are they going to pass? Like, what are they? They're just going to have Rashida Tlaib like this. Are you ready?
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm laughing at this so hard. It's probably not funny to anyone else, but it's almost like what's her name? AOC saying, Keynes and Friedman. She mixed them together.
What'd she say?
She mixed together, Keynes and Friedman.
Milton Friedman and Keynes?
Yeah. She used Milton Keynes.
Milton Keynes. She said Milton Keynes?
Yes. This is an economics major in college.
That is like saying Jesus and Satan.
I know.
What? Satan Christ.
Let's this is not funny, okay? Maybe it's not as funny as I think it is, but it's funny to me. Here we go. Hold on.
Policy would be.
This is Tlaib. She's on the Financial Services Committee, okay?
Of the authority. Now, you've mentioned that in the face of another financial crisis, you would use the same tools of expanding the balance sheet and purchasing long-term bonds. In other words, more of the same, correct?
Yes.
So I'm afraid that's simply not good enough. I mean, I think your predecessor's former chair is Yellen, and I believe it's Bernanke, seemed to agree based on remarks both that gave last month. For instance, Chairman...
She's reading from a paper. She has no idea what she's talking about. Bernanke? She don't even know who Bernanke is?
Yeah, welcome. What did she spend the last 15 years in an opium den? Like, what are you talking about? Ben Bernanke? You don't, this is like, this has been one of the biggest, too big to fail. Have you turned on HBO? Where have you been?
Bernanke?
What is this?
I knew it was funny. Okay. I'm not crazy.
Oh God.
I could do better than this. And lastly, okay, Maggie Haberman coming in for the win, believe it or not. Somebody tweeted, Tim O'Brien, who's some, you know, blue check mark, senior advisor to Mike Bloomberg's campaign. You know what? Maybe we'll do the Mike Bloomberg thread before we go because we have 6 minutes. But Tim O'Brien says, the height thing actually doesn't bother Mike, Maggie. Size matters to Trump, but it's the size of the deficit, the size of Trump's ego, and the scale of our constitutional crisis that do actually bother Mike. Talk about focus group stupid lingo that doesn't work anymore. Maggie Haberman says, I'm going to disagree with you. As someone who covered him in his 2001 campaign and for many years after, Tim, typically people who are not bothered don't put down the wrong height on their driver's license. Maggie for the win. As they begin to eat themselves alive, we're going to find some unlikely, albeit very, very temporary allies.
I can't believe people still use the word constitutional, the phrase constitutional crisis seriously. And that's the thing that I wish, you know, people usually say it in in environments where they know they're not going to get any kind of a response, or that the response is going to be buried in a comment section. There's never any, nobody has ever held to account for that. Like, I wish someone like Chris Ann Hall or someone like Ned Ryan, Brian McClanahan, anybody could be on national television or on some well-watched platform with someone like, Bloomberg's assistant is just one of thousands of people trying to say that we're on the verge of a crisis or in a crisis. I would love to hear someone using that phrase in this way to be asked very basic questions about their political beliefs, their party platforms, their favorite candidates' ideas, how it applies to federal government, whether or not it's constitutional or not. I actually really basic questions about civic living and civil rights.
Nobody
I would
knows
love.
Those things.
It would be so fascinating to get Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in a situation that she cannot escape.
She'd
that
there's say, gonna be, she'd say, such as like the girl from South Carolina.
Oh yeah, yeah. It would be Miss America all over again. Mm-hmm. It would be with no commercial breaks. There's no cutting away with the camera. Sit there and you swore. And no. It's not about your personal beliefs. You swore an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. So why? You have to be able to answer why you are pushing for things. Everything is in complete contradiction of the thing that gave you a living.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to be able to articulate that. She would not be able to do it. There should be no goddamn commercial breaks.
She'd
we
be calling
see
you a
them.
Racist by the end of
I,
it.
I don't care. Good. Call me a racist. I just want to watch you twist. You bankrupt.
Speaking of being bankrupt, here's a quick thread about someone who isn't. Maybe morally. The degree to which Michael Bloomberg is using his fortune to fundamentally alter and manipulate U.S. politics to his advantage extends way beyond ads. I've worked against him, covered him as a journalist, and worked with his aides. Here's their playbook. Bloomberg is paying for endorsements. Bloomberg is using the money that he's used to buy people their seats in Congress as a plus for him. Same thing with community groups. Also, he's bribing people with technology, wine, and cheese platters. In addition, he takes talent away from other campaigns by giving them huge salaries. His campaign staffers are making 70 grand a year. Compare that with Mr. Bernie, who cut their hours so we could pay them less than minimum wage. He is also paying off people not to donate to other candidates. So like he'll say to so-and-so, don't donate to Bernie or whoever, and I'll give you $1 million.
Wow.
So it's long thread, but it's really pretty bad. Honestly, it's horrible what he's doing. I don't think it's going to work at the end of the day. He has the personality of a dying tree. So, and he's horrible. He's a horrible person. So I don't think it's going to work for him, to be honest. But people said that he has so many commercials on television. These are Democrats. They're tired of seeing them. They just tune it off out now.
Yeah. On the flip side, if there's one silver lining to all this, at least wine and cheese is not uranium.
Correct. Yes.
There's a silver lining to anything.
I want him to spend a quarter or more, maybe a half of his fortune, and still have Donald Trump beat the pants off of him in a general. Because the left is attacking him. They're going after him like he's like now, except the news organizations, because they're all making a lot of money off his campaign. Very horrible. Very, very convoluted. We got to get into it more next time. But I have an assignment I need to do now, Frank. So we have to end the show with 59 minutes and 40 seconds. What do you say?
Yeah, that's fine.
You guys have been listening to the Dark Delight podcast with
Valentine's Day Val and
Valentine's Day Val and Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Apple iTunes, Radio, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. We will see you on Monday.
Later.
Hey gang, Jerry P. Tuck here, co-host of A Place for My Head. Each week, Brandon Thompson and I are going to be talking about the importance of mental health. We're going to be talking everything from stress, anxiety, different mental illnesses, different chronic illnesses, and frankly, the rigors of everyday life and how we all struggle to get through it. We're not medical professionals, but we are looking to start that conversation that needs to be had about the stigma around mental illness and how it affects us every single day. We'll talk to experts, but at the end of the day, A Place for My Head is all about real people with real stories about real life. Check out A Place for My Head with Brandon Thompson and myself, Jerry P. Tuck, each week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.